Home Tech Show, show number 7 for January 13th, 2011. Tonight, I am joined by both Christian and John. Christian, how are you tonight?
I'm doing well, guys.
Good. And did you have a good New Year?
I did. Enjoyed it much.
Good. I don't think I've talked to you in a couple weeks. We got busy with all kinds of things, and we skipped last week on the podcast. We didn't get out there with CES. I'm assuming you found some things to do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, very good. Hey, how's the add-in going? I know you continue to work on that. How you did this add-in for the Windows Home Server? How's that going?
Yeah, it's doing really well actually in terms of sales and getting seen on the internet. There will be an update released either this weekend or next weekend that adds 2 small tidbits to it just to kind of clean it up a bit. But yeah, it's running rock solid. Have a lot of positive feedback, and had a couple guys contact me about using it to deploy on small businesses where they take and set up a home server and install the add-in with it. So that's pretty
nice.
Cool.
Dude, you're like a money magnet.
I know. What can I do? Might as well just get the tree and
you're doing well.
The money tree.
I know.
Right,
your money tree is growing well. BIOS Mods continues to do well. You're getting some good traffic out there as well, I take it.
Yes, we broke 15,000 members and 2,000 hits a day. So
that just astounds me. I mean, we're talking about that. You know, most people don't even mess with their BIOS.
Yeah.
And you guys have quite a community growing over there.
You'd be surprised how desperate people get when they can't get something to work right.
Yeah, that's for sure. So what's kind of the most common thing that folks do with their BIOS? I mean, you mess with a lot of that stuff. What are some common things that folks are looking for?
Well, normally the basic thing is really just adding options that they can't get. So if there's some really picky option that they need, then there's a chance it may be hidden. A lot of overclockers come to the site to see if they can get overclocking options on their regular bought it from HP box. And then an increasingly alarming number of people are trying to upgrade their motherboard to support newer processors. So if it's a supported socket, then we're trying to add the CPU stuff. So there's a lot of that. Some whitelist mods to use unsupported Wi-Fi cards that OEM. So really, it's just a whole variety of stuff. Yeah, it's just everything and everything. You know, take it apart, build it back together, make it something it wasn't, and hopefully for the better. You know.
Sure.
You know, Christian, I'm lucky. You know what? I have you available to me, and I didn't even think about it. I got a problem with my BIOS on my computer that I should get you to do some work on. You know, what I did is I set up my Windows Home Server, what they call Windows Deployment Service. So anyway, basically, you can put some software, let's say the OS, you know, your Windows 7 install disk on your server, and then you boot up your PC in what they call Pixie Boot, PXE. So that's a bit like a lot of computers, when they start off, you can hit a button and then it boots into this mode where it kind of looks on the network to see, hey, is there anybody there wants to give me, let's say, a Windows 7 install drive. So let's say if you had a netbook or something like that where, you know, you didn't have a CD drive to boot off. So this is what this Pixie PXE boot allows you to do. And for some reason in my BIOS there, I can't find the option to boot Pixie. And I think some guys were saying it's not in there and stuff like that. So I'll have to maybe use your resources to find me a way to get that working.
We'll have to look into it.
Very nice. Well, John, I didn't get a chance to introduce you, but John, you podcast with us on the homeservershow.com, and we missed you last week, or last night, actually, and you agreed to join us tonight. What's going on with you these days? What you been doing while we were at CES?
Yeah, what I did is, you know, a new year, so sometimes you make some of those cleanups, right? So I says, you know, that's it. I'm going to redo my my Windows Home Server from scratch, you know, like, because that's the thing is sometimes even like, you know, in your PC and stuff, after a while, you know how it is, right? Things get, messed up and you've installed some programs, you uninstalled programs and stuff like that. So it just, after a while, it just doesn't seem to run as well as it originally did, you know? So I said, you know what, I'll start off the year with the cleaning up my Windows Home Server, put some extra functionality because I'm a tinkerer, right? So I'll put some extra stuff in there that I had broken, and I learned along the way how to do it now the right way.
Yeah.
So I've been working on that, cleaning that all up. That's it. I don't have to go to the gym, so I'm okay with that. At least I don't have to exercise so much. I'm a slim, tall guy.
Well,
so.
You're up there in the north, too, and I'm sure you got a lot of snow on the ground, and so getting out might be a little difficult. But we picked up some snow this weekend, and so I've kind of been staying indoors. But I, too, you know, I'm getting ready to test kind of the newest version of Windows Home Server, Beta 3 or whatever they're going to call it, whenever that comes out. I still don't have it. But I realized I have to test that on the box that I currently have Windows 7 on, and I can't. I was going to do it virtual, and I can't because I want to run it USB 3, and that virtual box doesn't support that very well. So I think this weekend I'm going to be taking a backup of my Windows box and moving it onto another box, which, ooh. Christian, you know from what you just did,
oh, yes.
Right? That gets a little, you know, to take a bare metal restore from one box and move it to another can be a little challenging, right?
To say the least.
Yeah. Now, you had to delete most of your drivers and let those drivers reinstall.
Correct.
Then?
Yeah.
Is that kind of the trick? And so we'll see how that goes. I'll be moving from a Core i3 box to an HP dual core box. And you know, rather than reinstall Windows, which I do most of the time anyways, I'm really going to make an effort to see if I can do a quick restore, delete all the drivers, let them refine them, and see if that does it for me. I don't want to spend all weekend building another Windows 7 image like I normally do. So. That'll be my weekend, putting some things together in preparation for some more Drobo reviews. So I have the Drobo FS in hand, and want to do some testing with that as well as finish up the final reviews that I have on the Drobo. So I got a lot of stuff to do and still kind of unpack from CES. It's been a crazy week. Once I got back and got home, unpacking stuff, and so we're just kind of getting things back to normal. So speaking of backup, guys, I want to talk a little bit about backup. We kind of hint at the end of the show about it, the last couple shows. But I want to spend a little time tonight talking through. Now, we're all home server guys, and so we use the home server to back up our PCs. But not everybody has a home server. So let's assume for a second that we're not going to use a Windows Home Server, or you've got to provide some assistance or some advice to someone who's not going to buy a home server. And they need a solid backup solution of sort. And they've got some money. They've got maybe a couple $100 to invest in this, not for a full solution, but maybe they can buy some external drives or something along those lines. There's kind of a common approach to backup that I've heard a lot. I've heard this mentioned on podcasts before. It's called the 3-2-1 backup approach. So three different copies. So in order to have good backup, you have to have the file in three different places with two different kinds of media and one of those media being offsite. Okay. So the file, if you have a file and it's on your PC and you buy an external drive and you move it from your PC's hard drive to the external drive, you didn't do backup, right? It's still only in one place. If you lose that file, it's gone, right? So it needs to be on your PC as well as on an external drive. It also needs to be, ideally, and it also would it'd be nice if it was maybe moved up to the cloud or put on a drive that was taken off site. So I want to throw that out to you guys. I know Windows 7 has some backup capability built into it, and I messed around with that a little bit last week in preparation for a Drobo review. I'll throw that out. Christian and John, have you guys messed with the Windows 7 backup that's native in the software?
Well, what I know about the Windows 7 backup, which is better than when it was, I think, in Vista and XP, was, and I'm not sure if it's certain level, the higher up, you have the Home Premium and then Ultimate. But at one time, you can just back up some like settings and stuff like that. But now you can make a whole image backup in Windows 7. So I know that that's possible, and you know, to an external USB drive. So that's like a bit like one of the simplest and built in. So that's a nice thing that you don't have to worry about installing a software. You know, like sometimes you buy a USB drive and then it comes with software and it's like, well, what am I doing? You know, at least with Windows 7, you can plug in that USB drive. It'll see, you know, that you have it'll do like a search. Oh, I see a drive, you know, and what's nice is that it won't let you back up to the same hard drive, you know,
right?
Because, you know, it wants another drive. So it says, it does. Okay, now that's a good drive that I can back up. So it's pretty, it's a nice option. Microsoft, like, they did something nice with the Windows 7 there, you know, instead of people having to run out and buy, you know, $40, $50 software, it's like it's built into Windows 7.
Yeah, it kind of appeared almost in secret. You know, for a long time, people have struggled with backup, and mm-hmm. you mentioned, you know, Vista and XP before it. Nothing ever really worked very well, and in fact, that's kind of why we all moved to the Windows Home servers, because we got tired of backup not working, and it worked really well with the Windows Home server. But when Windows 7 came out last October, they kind of snuck in this backup that, John, you're right, it does create like an image, and then it prompts you to create an individual CD or DVD for the, you know, if your hard drive did crash, you could put that in, and that would start the recovery process. And so I did that. I did that the other day, and it actually works, which yeah. was surprising to me, right?
Surprising, it worked.
Like,
yeah.
Hey, this solution works. Christian, have you messed around at all with the Windows 7 backup?
No, not with the Windows 7 backup. The only really native Windows backup that I'm familiar with and I've used before is the XP backup, which really just is a pain, to say in the least, because it doesn't do the full image backup. It's this really big and bulky .bak file, and it really doesn't even like back up your entire operating system. All it's doing is backing up all your documents, pictures, music, all that generic like user-specific settings, and then compressing it in a zip file format. So that really wasn't a true backup where you can hit a button and get your operating system back to where it was on a specific date. But it looks like, yeah, Windows 7 has improved on it a lot, but I haven't used it.
Yeah, I think what I might try and do actually is I've got, you know, I told you just a minute ago, I'm going to have to restore, I'm moving my image from one PC to another. So what I might do is take an external hard drive. I just got a new one from Tim DeLeo, and plug that into to the old box, backup, use Windows 7 backup, create the DVD, and then move that over to the new PC and try and restore it. So to see if that actually works.
Yeah, you know, that's one nice thing, again, just reiterating about Windows 7. Remember just like how they didn't have a really good antivirus solution, you know, and then they came out with the Security Essentials. And right. Now it's even part of the Windows update, you know, that
yeah.
they can get it. So this is a nice another chunk that, you know, besides being a great thing that, you know, Windows 7, I mean, you know, it's a super software. So that's it. This is another proof that they did a really good job with the backup solution. I don't know if you can schedule the backups. That's what I like about the Windows Home Server solution, is that, you know, you can turn up the PC and every day it'll do like a backup, and they'll do like a single instance backup. Like, you know, it'll say, okay, I already have a backup, and now it's like, okay, now you want me to make another backup? Well, I'll only copy the files that have changed. So, you know, it does, you don't have right. like multiple copies, multiple images. I don't know if that's if they use something along the lines with the Windows 7. But it is a good
there
solution.
Is a schedule there, John. If you go, you know, down to the Start menu, go Start, Control Panel, and then under the System and Security, which is the very first set of options, you can click on that, and or there's right below that it says Backup and Restore, and so you can go into that section. And there is a schedule that you can set. At this point, I have mine set to run every Sunday at 7 p.m., but you can go in and change that. It does give you a variety of options when you go in there, whether you want that daily or weekly or I think monthly. Let me pull that open. You can set the destination to where it's going to go, and you're right, it won't let you, you know, it won't let you make a copy of that backup back to the drive that you're trying to back up. And so you would set, in this case, I don't currently have an external drive on my PC. So all it sees is the DV drive that I have in there, and so that's my only selection. I could select that, and it will burn a copy of the image to a DVD. I'm assuming there's enough space there. And so I get some options like, do I want to choose – so what do you want to back up? And it'll say the options are let Windows choose or let me choose. Always take the default, which is let Windows choose. They kind of done – I bet they did a bunch of work trying to figure out what the right things are. And if you go in there and you don't choose the right stuff, you may not be able to do a full restore on it. And then you can review the settings and save the settings and run the backup. And it's that simple. I mean, it's and actually I'm running a backup right now. I should probably stop that. But it really is that simple. Maybe four clicks to do Windows 7 backup. And so if you're not, you know, that might be a situation where you run and get an external hard drive that's a little bit larger than your current system drive. Plug mm-hmm. that in USB. Run that at least once a week. I don't know if you're doing a lot of work on your PC, maybe once a day, and get those files backed up. That way, if you lose, you know, you lose your hard drive. So the file would be on your PC as well as on this backup. That's still only in two places. And so, you know, that you might want to consider, in this case, two external hard drives. One that stays with you and one that goes off-site, right? So you're doing your backups to one that you take off-site. You're doing a copy of your backups to one that stays on-site so you can always have access to it. And then you've got a copy on your system partition. I don't know, guys, what are the kind of backup? I mean, John, besides the Windows Home Server, do you deploy any other kind of backup methodology to make sure stuff is being duplicated?
Sometimes I will play around with Acronis.
Okay.
Acronis is a good program, but I'm using it, like, again, in more technical in the server environment. So what I do is what you can do is on your hard drive, you can allocate a certain amount of space. So let's say, you know, you have a 500 gig or a terabyte hard drive. You can allocate a hidden space, and then when you can schedule it to do a backup of your PC to that hidden area. And then when you what happened now is, let's say if your computer crashed or something, then you would boot up, you would hit like F11, you know, when you would see the DOS, you would hit F11, it would menu would pop up and you say, yeah, I want to restore because I messed something up. And then it would go into that area and then it would restore. So it's great. You don't have to do it from a USB drive. You don't have to do it from any flash drive or CDs. But, you know, you're not protected against, you know, a hardware failure. If that hard drive, you know, is toasted, if it starts, you know, making noise and it's defective and stuff like that, well, you know, you just put all your, like, eggs sort of like in that one basket, you know, it's on that drive. So sometimes that's not a good option to do it that way. But Acronis will also allow you to, you know, it'll scan your, you know, with the hardware you have, and it'll say, okay, you have a USB drive, I'll put it there. You have a network share, fine, I'll put it there. So there's other solutions as far as these, like, you know, the crash plan and Carbonite and all of that. So Acronis is a pretty good software.
Okay. Christian, what, besides the Windows Home Server, do you guys kind of deploy any other, or do you have any best practices backup that you do that's outside of the home server environment?
Well, we use Windows Home Server just for PC backup images. Mm-hmm. For actual data that's outside of, like, I wouldn't store on my desktop, but I would store on the network drive. It's set up in a replication environment.
Okay.
A free tool from Microsoft called SyncToy.
Oh yeah.
Which is at version 2.1. So there's five 2-terabyte drives in the server, and what SyncToy does is it replicates the information between two different servers so that there's always a copy available of it if one of the servers goes down.
Sure.
So that's really the custom backup solution I'm using right now.
And that's a pretty technical solution. I mean, that SyncToy is an easy toy. It's an easy application to use. Anybody could use that. You guys probably have a little more hardware than most people would have, right?
Right, yeah. Well, the two servers and everything. So you'd really need at least one other computer that you knew was a stable system to kind of SyncToy to. Although you could even set it up to SyncToy to a USB drive or something
right.
like that, you know.
I was just gonna say that. You could go out and buy a 2-terabyte external drive. They're $99, maybe even a little bit cheaper. Plug them, and most people don't have a 2-terabyte drive on their PC at this point, right? They're probably 500, 600, 700, 800, 1 terabyte. And then you would install SyncToy and go from your C drive to whatever drive that external is on and just copy everything. Or you could select maybe your data files. Or, you know, I always say just take everything over. It's not that big of a deal. You don't have that much stuff, but at least you'll back up everything. And then that SyncToy doesn't have a scheduler, right? Do you have to run that? How do you guys get past that?
It does have a scheduler.
It does.
You can set it up through It's not really clear at first how you do it, but you can use Task Scheduler in Windows to set up a sync command. So I have mine set up to, I sync documents between my netbook and my desktop. So if I come home and I have a changed document, it gets synced with my desktop, so I don't have to go, where did I just put that document? But yeah, it sets it up so that it syncs on the hour or when it sees the other computers come on the network.
Okay, so there is some scheduling in there. That has always been I've always found that to be the most difficult thing for people to get, is a system that just kind of works automatically for them. Because if you don't set it automatic, you forget about doing it, and then it never gets done. And John, when I know Chris and I looked at Crash Plan, Chris Lux and I looked at Crash Plan about a year ago. But I think that also allows you to, that's an online, they're a cloud-based service, but they provide some client software. And I think that you can do some backup drive to drive internally, I think. I don't know. Do you remember us going through that? Does that sound familiar?
Yeah. I remember CrashPod, where you would, I don't think you paid for it, right? You didn't have to pay for it
free.
If you're actually going to person-to-person their computer over the network or over the internet. This is where, it works when you have a good high speed internet.
Right.
That's the best.
And Chris and I did it where we shared space. Yeah. We allowed for backup. So this might work with your family, right? So you have a PC and your brother lives across town. And he gives you some space and you give him some space, and you set up Crash Plan to, you replicate some of your files to his PC, and he does some to yours. And that way, if there's ever a major crash or fire or something, you could recover those files from each other's PC.
Yeah, so that's it. Instead of actually walking it over to the person's house, you're doing it over the internet if you have a good speed. And also, it's all encrypted, so even though you're sending your brother your tax forms or whatever, he can't read them.
Yeah. Now, that's right. It's encrypted, right? When we were at CES, we saw this company, new one, I hadn't seen it before, called ClickFree. And what they do is they have a box that has, it looks like, maybe like a little bit bigger than an external hard drive. And inside it is a wireless router and a 500 or 750 gig laptop drive, fairly small. And what you do is you plug that into your network, and it comes with a USB key. And you go around to each PC and you plug the USB in and install this little client, and it discovers the wireless, the wireless settings, and it scans the hard drive and stuff, and then it starts sending backups to that device that you've just plugged in. And it's all done wirelessly, and so the first time it copies everything, and then it just does differentials. And I thought that was a pretty handy little, for the average user who might have, 200 or 300 gig worth of stuff in their house to back up, a pretty easy solution. You don't have to plug anything in. It's all wireless. It's a very light client that goes on the PC. Again, it's one of those things that you kind of set it and forget it, and folks get backup. We're going to talk about that more both here probably and at the Home Server Show as we move away from CES. But I think folks need to continue to look at those kind of solutions. If they have questions, if you're listening to this and you're still confused about backup and you want some help, you can shoot us an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv, and we can kind of help you individually at that point. So any other things around backup, guys, that you can think of that that would help folks, kind of your average guy?
Did we mention Carbonite?
I didn't. Do you want to?
Yeah, it's really just another offline backup solution that a lot of people have been using. So I haven't really used it myself, but I hear very good things about it.
Yeah, I used it. I used their free trial, so carbonite.com. And it's easy to set up, and it's one of those things, you kind of set it up, you turn it on. I think it's like $50 a year, so it's not terribly expensive for most people. And it backs up your stuff. So I would say that's cloud-based, right? That's a cloud-based solution. Those things are getting backed up to the Carbonite servers. There's probably, on the Home Server Show, we reviewed 7, 8, 9, 10 different kind of cloud-based, Keep Vault and Walla and Crash Plan and some of those. So there's a lot of different options out there to back up. I just think it can be as easy as purchasing an external hard drive. to do it, although one external hard drive is probably not going to do it. You're probably going to need two. Or you're going to, if you have multiple PCs in the house, there are ways to go PC to PC and get that, you know, have one PC back up the other. So, you know, don't ignore that, guys.
Jim, I was going to mention, you brought up Keep Vault. One of the nice things I like about Keep Vault is that they have a solution for the Windows Home Server, but then they also have just for, you know, regular PCs where you install, again, this Keep Vault connector on your PC, and you get it. You can set it to watch certain folders, and anytime you you copy a file into that folder or you update a file, it'll sync automatically to the online. So, you know, so it's in, it's doing it in real time. So this is great because, I mean, you can work on a document and then if you, I don't know, let's say you're, you had a power failure and you just, you're wiped out your hard drive. Well, you know, that software, like bang, that, those, that data is already at the, you know, hopefully transmitted it all there, but it's like, it's doing it in real time. So this is some, something nice where it's, you know, you don't have to wait till the end of the day to your, for your backups to be scheduled and that type of thing.
Yeah.
So that's one nice thing about them. And then the other thing about just one point I wanted to make about the what was the one we were talking about? SyncToy. Mm-hmm. What's nice, I use sometimes SyncToy because they have an option. It's really good, the list. You look there, and they have options to it's called Sync, and then there's another called Contribute and another one called Echo. So it all depends how you want your information like sent to your backup type thing. For instance, let's say, you know, you have a folder where, you know, you're downloading stuff during the day and or during the week, during the month, and you say, okay, you know what? Now I want this backed up. So it gets backed up. A copy of it is made. You know, it's synced, or let's say it's made, it's copied over to another location. Then you, what you can do, and now you say, you know what, now that file, I got a really lot of that stuff on my PC, I'll delete it. So what happens is it's not really a synchronization, it's a contribute. You set it up to contribute. So what happens is, which means that whatever you deleted now in that folder on your PC, it's not going to delete the same on your backup. It's all, it's going to, that stuff is going to stay there. Right. And as you continue to fill up this, let's say this new folder, we'll call it, let's say a downloads folder, you continue to add stuff, then bang, this guy will contribute to the other drive. So it's, that's what it's always doing. It's always contributing. So your off-site or your stuff that's on the other drive, it's just growing and growing and growing. Eventually, you'll run out of hard disk space. But what's nice is it gives you this option where you don't have to have exactly, you know, a clone of your software. So it gives you these choices. That's what's nice about the SyncToy. It gives you Sync, Contribute, and Echo. So there's different options depending on what you want. So, yeah, there's a lot of nice solutions available.
Yeah, John, thanks for bringing that up. It's a really powerful tool, and it's really easy to use. And so if you haven't used that before, we'll post. I'll post a link in the show notes so folks can go out and download that and try it. It's a really good, handy free tool that works. And so it is a way for you to move files from one place to the other. I like it because I you can't always, especially if you're moving a lot of files. So say you're copying 200 gig worth of small files from one place to another. You know, Windows file transfer, whatever it's called, right, that when you just copy and paste, that's not always reliable. I don't know how many times this has happened to you guys, but I'll copy and paste, and in the middle of that transfer, I'll get an error, right? Mm-hmm. And then you're like, okay, so what transferred and what didn't, right? It just kind of bails out in the middle of it. The advantage of a SyncToy is that it skips it and moves on and then reports an error. If it can't copy it, maybe that file is locked or it's in read-only. It's in, Christian, what would be a status that wouldn't allow me to move a file?
Access denied.
Something like that, right? The permissions are wrong or whatever. It'll skip it and keep going and give you an error log that tells you, hey, I moved all these files except this one. And so, because that's really frustrating, especially if the transfer takes 20, 30, 40 minutes and you don't know where it stopped and you're like, I got to do it all over again.
Yeah, all that's right. Annoying. That happens a lot of times, or that used to happen a lot to me before. Sometimes what I would do is if I want to copy some stuff from, let's say, one folder to another folder, I use the move option, you know, so it's like move it from here to there. So whatever doesn't get done, well, then that's it. It's left in the folder. Because sometimes what it does is it tries, if you use copy, it's like, you know, you're copying it over there, and then you're deleting it over here. So sometimes it's really slow, and then like you say, if it fails, it's like, well, what did I copy? Then you have to like kind of compare or maybe select the whole thing again.
Yeah.
So sometimes I try to use the option move instead of copy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just a little trick if you're moving a lot of files around. When I move files from home server to home server, or I created a new home server because I'm moving the old one off this old hardware, and I wanted to move those files. SyncToy is the only way to do it. I mean, you set it, you run it, and then the beauty of that as well is if you need to come back later, say you've added content to that folder. Right, when you use the sync, it really then only copies the new ones since the last time you synchronized, and so the next synchronization is very, very quick.
Yeah, and it'll give you a breakdown. It'll tell you like it skipped these or these are ones are already there and stuff like that. So it gives you a nice little menu that you can look through. Yeah,
yeah, it's just a
handy thing for free.
Yeah. It's another one of those good tools just to install on your PC. You know, whenever you when you get a new PC, it's one of those tools like Windows Live Essentials. Some of those, you know, like Security Essentials. SyncToy is one of those other good ones just to have on there, too. And I hate the fact that they called it Toy, you know? It's SyncToy, they could have been something better. Anyways, okay. Hey, so speaking of that, we were in the control panel looking for backup. But, you know, one of the things, I think a lot of the tools in Windows 7 got better as well from Vista. And so if you haven't been in your control panel in a while, and maybe as you're listening to the show, you'll go in that to look at your backups. But I wanted to highlight a few of the tools in there, and I'm going to ask you guys to kind of pick which are the ones that you use the most that are in there. But, you know, I do find myself using the uninstall program feature a lot within Windows 7. Now, that's not new to Windows 7, right? That's been in there way back in that. But I found that application, the way they redesigned that for Windows 7, works really, really well. And there's a lot of features in there, more than just installing and uninstalling programs. I don't know, guys. John, you do a lot of hacking. When you're removing programs, that's pretty much the only way to do it, right, in Windows 7?
Yeah, but one of the nice free small programs I like to use is called Revel Uninstaller.
Okay.
And that's that's a little program that you install, you install, and it sits let's say, on top of the built-in uninstaller. So what happens is you open up the Revel Uninstaller, and you'll have icons. You can set it up how you want it to display it, in the list or in large icons or whatever. So now you'll have your icons. So let's say you have some program there. You say, I want to uninstall this one. Then it says, okay, fine. Now what it will do is it'll run the built-in uninstaller that comes into with the software, you know. So that program will run its own uninstaller. Then when it's finished, Revel Uninstaller will say, like, oh, wait, let me check to see now if there's something left behind, like some registry keys or some files. Because sometimes you'll notice you'll uninstall a program, let's say Quicken, and then you get back to your computer and you see program files /Quicken, and there's a couple of files there. It's like, hey, I uninstalled this. You know, why is there something there? Not that Quicken does it. I'm just using that as an example. So sometimes there it leaves some traces behind or some registry keys in your registry. And when your computer boots up, you know, it goes through all these registries to find information. So it starts to become like a bottleneck. So one of the things with Revel Uninstaller is, like I said, when it finishes running the built-in uninstaller, then the Revel guy will take over and says, do you want me to, you know, scan and, you know, how hard, you know, how deep of a search you want. So you could say, just run the moderate, the easy stuff. And it'll run a scan and it'll present you with some results in the registry. The first one it does is checks the registry and they'll say, this is what I found left. Do you want to delete it? Yes or no. So at least here, you know, with your own, you know, if you don't feel comfortable, you can say, no, skip it. Just continue, or yes, go ahead. You know, these are relevant files, because you always take a second look, make sure it's not deleting stuff you don't want. So it deletes the registries, and then the next part it scans, it checks that folder where it did the uninstall, and it shows you a list of anything that might be left behind. You know, and then you can say yes, fine, or you can say skip. You know, so I like to use that one. I like the graphics interface is nice. And it gives me that extra functionality where it cleans out some of the registries and it cleans out any program files that folders or that data that it leaves behind. So that's what I like. You try that one, Christian?
Yeah, I have used that one. I also like using CC Cleaner just to general clean up Windows cookie trails.
Yeah, I got CC Cleaner on my. I got those. I'm running them both on my PCs and on my Windows Home Server. And really? I've never run into a problem where it's. Let's say as far as CC Cleaner, it never installed, never uninstalled like too much. It never broke down. Some I've had NCleaner and I've had System Mechanic, and they went like too much. They went overboard and they got rid of a bunch of stuff, and I got nailed. But CCleaner, it was pretty cool. It did its job. The uninstaller there, Revel uninstaller, that one went one time I uninstalled an add-in in Windows Home Server, and then what it does is it uninstalled the add-in, but then it went into the Windows Home Server folder connector software, and it tried to uninstall all those files. So there it kind of went a little bit overboard. So this is what's nice about, like I said earlier, the check to see, hey, you know, are these files still, you know, whatever. But CCleaner is a nice little free program that that I use. It cleans up, what does it do? It cleans up the files. It cleans up some registries. And then it also does, you can tell it to, like, let's say some clean free space. Like, it'll zero out the drive. You know, like sometimes some people are a little bit paranoid. They delete some files, and then they say, does it really, you know? Because what happens is when Windows actually deletes files on your computer, it doesn't really delete them, but it does is it erases where the, like, there's a list, file allocation table, and it says, okay, you know, those files are sitting on the hard drive over there. So what it does is it just deletes the entry of where those files are. So those files are technically never deleted. This is why, you know, sometimes people can go and have their files undeleted. It goes and they'll go to that list and they'll undelete it. But the only way to really delete is either to rewrite something over that those files or to actually zero out those spaces. And that's one of the options that CCleaner does. It'll say, let me go and zero that, you know, that those files were that are meant to be deleted. So that's a nice little tool that it runs there. So there you go. That's my story for CCleaner.
That's your story. You're sticking to it. Hey, and so, you know, in that control panel under programs, you know, we often use the uninstaller program. I think people are most familiar with that. But there's some additional features in that section, like you can turn Windows features on or off. So there's some things that you can go in there. Maybe you don't like. There's a variety of things that Windows does. And so as far as the way the Windows look, the indexing services, there's some advanced things in there that you can go in and you can kind of turn on and off the variety of what's available. One of the features is the games, right? And so, like, I have the games installed, but I don't have them turned on. And so this would be an area, if you're not seeing the games in Windows 7, if you go into this turn Windows features on and off, the very first folder is games. If you click that on, you can choose which ones, like Chess and Free Cell and Hearts, the old games, the games from Windows 3.1 days, they're all still there. I think by default they're turned off. And so you can turn them on and play those games. So if you're wondering where your games went, that's where they are. You can also view installed updates, right? Now, this is kind of handy if you want to know what Microsoft has been doing with your PC at night. It seems like Windows anymore gets at least an update a night. Maybe it's not that frequent, but
it's every Tuesday, really.
Yeah.
When the updates come through.
Right. They come through Tuesday and reboot Wednesday, right? It always seems like when I come home from work on Wednesday, right before the podcast,
update Tuesday,
it's rebooted. Now, I have my PC set to reboot automatically, but now certainly I get automatic updates from Microsoft Security Essentials every night. So I am getting updates, you know, for Microsoft on a daily basis, but most of them are for Security Essentials. Also in that section is, and you guys can tell me if you guys run this, but run programs for previous versions of Windows. So Windows XP compatibility. Maybe you have a program that only runs on Windows XP. Christian, have you ever had to use that feature in Windows 7?
Yes, I actually have for several developer tools that are kind of, you know, fading in the dust, but I still use them for BIOS modification. Mm-hmm. I do use I'll go in and set it to XP Service Pack 3, and then I'll also sometimes check that box that says run as administrator so that it doesn't bring up that it forces the UAC prompt so that there's no file writing issues.
Okay. John, have you done that, had to do that with Windows 7 at all?
Yeah, I've installed, again, this is, well, as far as Windows Home Server, what happens is sometimes there's software that you can't install in the Windows Home Server because, you know, it checks it and says, hey, this is Windows Home. Like, let's say, CCleaner doesn't do it, but let's say some programs will check to see what version of Windows you have installed. So let's say you have an old program that, I don't know, stock market program, you know, and you try to install it and it says, hey, you know, this is from 1985. I don't know what the software is. Yeah. So when you install it, you can actually, sometimes you can still get it installed, but then you can, that's it. Like Christian said, you can, I usually click on the, I find like the exe file. I right click properties and that's it. I say, you know, run in compatible or run as administrator or also right. Run in the other mode, you know, select the mode. So that's it. You can say XP version, whatever service pack 2 and then that's it. Then it'll run in that type of environment, which is great. It's not like you have to install, you know, like, what is it there? A virtual machine, you know, and have XP running on your server. You can just, or on your PC, you could just have that software and just say, run it in this mode. And that's great. And it works well. One thing I do like in the control panel is the power options. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, you can set it to go to sleep and wake up. You can tell it if it's streaming media. Because that's what sometimes is, because I have my... my Xbox 360 connected to my PC. You know, I don't want that if I'm in the living room and I'm streaming something. So now because the Xbox is like connected remote desktop connection to the PC. You know, if I'm watching something and then let's say the computer's saying, oh, I'm not doing anything, you know, I'll go to sleep. And then like it shuts down. So one of the options in the power management is you can say that if it's streaming, like don't shut down, don't go to sleep. So I find I'm in there a bit, you know, and then setting other little options, you know, like the screensaver. Yes, you can turn it on or turn it off. And if you're on, again, if you're on a laptop, that's even better. Sometimes you could say if you're on the battery, you know, don't do certain options and stuff.
Mm-hmm. There's one of the things I also like in this, and I think it's a feature a lot of people don't really understand, is the default program setting. So there's three different options there. You can change your default settings for media or devices. You can make a file type always open in a specific program, or you can set your default programs. Now, lots of people ask me all the time, okay, so I've got MP3s, and they always start with iTunes. Mm-hmm. And I want it to play in Windows Media Player, something like that. How do I do that? Well, these are the sections that you go into to get those set to say use these things. So like change default settings for media or devices. So that's an area where I would go and say whenever I have an audio CD, I am choosing to use, and you can pick whatever application that plays CDs, audio CDs on your PC. So in my case, I could open them with Roxio. I could open it with Zune. I could open it with iTunes. I mean, I get to pick what the default is. So if you're sick and tired of the wrong thing opening your music and you don't want that to happen, that's the area. This is the area you go into and choose, and you can change that. Most people I found don't mess with that, but it, again, if you don't like what it does it by default, in other words, make a specific file type always open in a specific program. So this is where if I wanted my MP3s to always open with iTunes, which I, you know, because when you're installing all these media players, right, Zune, iTunes, they all try to take over, right? They all try to be,
exactly.
You know, they try to be the master program for that stuff. And maybe you didn't want that. Right.
Yeah, like maybe you installed Firefox, you know, and then you know, it'll say, do you want me to be, or it gives you a choice. You want the Firefox to be your default program, and then you'll say, yeah. But then you try it out in a while, and you say, you know what, I want it to be the other one. Well, you don't want to now reinstall the other software. So that's a good point, is to go to this option there where it says default programs. And that's it. That's good for your browser. That's good. I know my sister says, she says, you know, that damn Outlook keeps opening up my emails and I want Windows Live. You
right.
Know?
So that's right.
It. It's like, well, you can go over here and you can say, no, let Windows Live Mail be my default program for email. And like you say, CDs and burning and even playing your music. Like you said, maybe Zune or Media Center or Media Player. So, yeah, that's a good tip.
Christian, do you find you use any other pieces of the, you know, you're kind of a hacker. Anything else in the control panel that you use to find helpful?
Well, I really like the performance information and tools section. which gives you that Windows Experience Index that we talked about in a previous podcast.
Mm-hmm.
It also has a lot of, it gives you direct access to your disk cleanup. But if you go to the bottom link, it says Advanced Tools. And that's where I really just go crazy because it has event log right there. And my favorite from this whole thing is Performance Monitor. And if you open up Performance Monitor, or no, wrong one, I'm sorry. If you open up Resource Monitor, take two, it gives you an overview of just more than what Task Manager would give you. So normally, you know, if a program is hanging up or it's not responding, you would open Task Manager and find it and try and execute it. Well, this program, Resource Monitor, shows you everything that's running on your CPU, your hard disk, your network, and your memory. So it kind of gauges and shows you 2D graphs of all the activity that's taking place. So if I'm having a computer where when I start it up for the first couple minutes, the hard disk is just thrashing and it's not stopping and it seems like it's just doing all this quote-unquote useless processing, I can open up Resource Monitor and I can filter it by, you know, if I'm looking at the hard disk, I can filter it by most bytes being written per second or read per second or total per second. So that's really helpful to kind of just do basic diagnostic stuff and see what programs on your computer are consuming the most space. And once you kind of get an idea of that, it's a better way to tackle how can I make my PC faster, what's causing it to be slow, and just overall usage. If you got stuff open, it's a great way to see what's going on.
And where would I find that in Control Panel?
If you go to Control Panel and then Performance Information and Tools and click that, you have to be in View by Large Icons or Small Icons. Get out of the category view.
Ah, okay. That's over on the – it says View by in the upper right-hand corner.
Mm-hmm.
And that defaults to category. And you're saying take it to large or small icons.
Yep.
Okay.
And then once you do that, you'll see an icon that says Performance Information and Tools. So we click that. And then you'll see your experience index. And on the left-hand panel, the bottom link says Advanced Tools.
Oh, yeah.
So you can go ahead and click that, and you'll see a whole bunch of list of tools. And the fourth one down says Open Resource Monitor. And then it's going to bring up a USC prompt. And it's really helpful. I mean, even if you're trying to make sure there's no suspicious network traffic going in or out of your PC, it shows you that, too. Shows you everything that's using your internet card. Shows you your network activity. It's just a great tool, you know. It's just nice. So, like, if I bring up my network activity right now, I see the Skype program. I see the Ustream is connected. So it's I enjoy it. It's nice to use. It's quick and
a lot of good info there.
Yeah, it saved me twice from serious situations that I would have been handicapped without this tool. So
yeah.
That's new to. I believe it's in Windows Vista as well, but yeah, XP, you were pretty much a sunken ship in regards to this. So
that section's got defrag, right? The old disk defragmenter, as they call it here. You can adjust your appearance and performance of Windows. It'll generate a system health report. So if you're having some issues that, you can go in there and run this report. There's another tool that I like called the Action Center. So if you go down to the bottom right-hand corner of your screen, and you'll see a little flag in Windows 7, and you can just, if you click on that one time, it'll say open, you choose Open Action Center. That's another place, again, it's got a bunch of tools. And under maintenance, if you drop that maintenance box down, you'll see it says view reliability history. Now, this is kind of nice if you've been having problems with your PC over the last month, and you can expand that out a little bit. But it gives you kind of a 30-day snapshot of what's been going on with your PC. So what updates were applied? There's a little red X that'll tell me if I click on the day, it'll tell me critical events. So in my case, on December 26th, Google Chrome stopped working on my PC. And I could check for a solution. So if I click that link, it'll go out to the Microsoft database, see if there's some kind of solution for it, and bring it back. Now, I'll be honest. I've done that before. I never get a solution. So I'm not sure if I've got unique problems or, you know, if that part really works. But if it, I use this at our church from time to time, if somebody comes to me and says, hey, this PC, one of the programs keeps crashing. Well, I can go into this reliability report, and I can see every time that that piece of software crashed and get some information on it and check and see if Microsoft has a solution for it. They might have a patch or an update or a fix that would assist me in that. So I find that too helpful. They also have this reliability index between 1 and 5. And every time it crashes, the reliability drops a little bit. So you can kind of get an idea of this little graph of how reliable your PC has been over time. My graph doesn't look very good. I'll be honest. I've pushed my PC pretty hard. The worst day for me was on January 9th. Oracle VirtualBox stopped working twice. I had Windows was not properly shut down, and Explorer hung. Windows stopped working. There was an unexpected shutdown. I think I had a power issue this day. So I think these were all these things that happened because of a power issue. But again, it gives me a really clear picture of what's going on with my PC if I'm having problems.
You know, Jim, that makes me think about my sister was having problems with her PC one day, and she's got Windows 7. And what I told her to do was click on, because, you know, sometimes people are not very good with the PCs. You know, you tell them install a program, they're a little bit lost and stuff. So what was cool is we used remote assistance, which is pretty nice built into Windows 7. And so that's you click on start, you type in remote assistance, and then it'll a nice pop-up will come up, and it'll say it'll ask somebody, you know, it'll give you a choice of to ask somebody to help you, or you help somebody, or somebody help you. And so that's it. With that option, I was able to log into her PC. You know, we both have into high-speed internet, so I was able to log in, and then that's it. I guess at that point, you can start to use something like you say, this, you know, performance monitor, or you see what's resource and stuff like that, and see, you know, what's kind of slowing down the computer, what's giving them a hard time.
Wow. Yeah.
So that was a nice thing again.
That is helpful.
Built into Windows 7 is that remote assistance.
Yeah, there's just tons of things. You know, folks have kind of gotten jaded on Windows over the years, and you know, Microsoft has made a big effort to make it. Well, certainly Windows 7 is a lot more stable than any of the other operating systems that they've had in the past. And they have a lot of helpful tools in there. So I thought we'd bring that up tonight, talk kind of around that. And if you didn't know any of those things were there, go out and take a peek through them. You really can't do any damage. I don't know, guys, can you do? Yeah, you can't do much damage. So take a peek and at a minimum, try backing up your PC to something, you know, to another drive to get familiar with that. It will ask you to burn a CD in the process, you know, recovery CD that's individually made for your computer, which is kind of cool, and that has the right drivers to get everything up and running. But give that a try. So any other thoughts on the control panel, guys?
Well, I would say, like, in the control panel, like, when you open it up, on the top on the right there's usually a little search guy. So, but you can also click on start, and then right on there, there's a little search area. What I find very useful is, that's it. You can right in there, you can, you know, let's say you had a question, you know, backup. How do I make a backup? You type it in. How do I make a backup? And like something will pop up and it'll give you some help. Like when, like you said before, Windows with Windows 7, they made it very friendly. You know, my sister had Vista, and then she said, well, maybe I'll go to XP. I said, you know, XP is more for the business and it's old school and this and that. You know, it's not very user friendly. I said, Windows 7 is really good for people who are unsure and stuff like that. And you can just type it in. Let's say make a, you know, copy DVD, and like something will pop up and it'll give you some information, it'll give you some links. You know, you don't even have to go on the internet to find a solution, which is good. I Google a lot of stuff, but one of the nice things built into Windows 7, and that's it. You, like you say, you know, resource system diagnostic. If you went into the search there and you type in system diagnostic, like something will pop up and it'll give you some information. So sometimes, you know, that's it. You don't know exactly where it is you need to click to get to what you want, but just, you know, just click in that search area and something will come up.
Yeah, good point, John. Good point. Well, hey, it's the time of the year. Christmas has come and gone. Folks maybe got new PCs. But it seems like this time of the year I get more friends calling me with virus problems. And I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just I don't know what it is, but I'm getting them weekly at this point. I'm at least getting one a week of friends saying, hey, I got a pop-up. My kids clicked yes to it. I can't get rid of it. You know, there's these kind of social engineering viruses that are out there now, and that's probably not the right word for it. But it says, hey, you've got a virus. You need to update. Click OK to update your you know, they call it scareware. To update your definitions, click OK. So you click OK, and when you click OK, you're really clicking OK to download the virus to your PC, right? And it looks very legit, but it's not. Mm-hmm. And kids don't care. My kids don't care. I mean, they're just clicking away, having a good time. I've just found most of them just don't even pay attention. I see that a lot. And it gets past the people always say, well, I had antivirus running. Why didn't that catch it? Well, because it didn't get the virus until you said okay, right? You click that, and you kind of invite that virus to be planted on your PC. Am I getting that right, guys?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what I wanted to talk – so there's two things in this. One is – and it seems like they're targeting kids these days. It's like – I don't know what it is, but kids – at least my kids want to look up lyrics to songs all the time, right? Those lyrics, Christian, you chuckle there. What's behind? Is that just kind of maybe that's a generational thing? And those lyric sites are loaded with these pop-ups, you know. And I think that's where a lot of folks are. Have you, Christian or John? Do you guys know of other, you know, other sites that that folks would want to watch out for? Or, I mean, I gotta continually educate my kids to say, don't click OK to everything.
Right, and I think that's just such a weird topic for some people that just makes me wonder, you know, what's the big problem here? You know, and I guess it's just because I try and be a smart surfer, but if I had no antivirus software, I doubt I'd ever get a virus. It's just, I know what I can see a site, and I can tell this is not
good. But you're careful, right?
Back, I mean,
you're in the web all the time. You're a web administrator. I mean, you know that.
Right.
So, my kids, my 16-year-old doesn't, right?
Yeah, so we'll have the occasional, you know, the occasional project for class that involves, you know, lyrics and finding some deeper meaning.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay. And I pull up the song. I'm like, okay, I'm going to get this done, you know, this project. I don't want to be doing it last night. Pull up iTunes, start playing the song. Okay, I cannot listen to this punk rocker. I can't even barely tell what he's saying. So, oh, let's go to lyrics.com, you know, let's type in the song, you know. And then the next thing you know, you get this, and this is the typical thing, you'll get a pop-up that says, your virus is infected. Click here to scan to get a free antivirus scan. So, you know, the average person is going to go, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? They go ahead, they click it. Next thing you know, this online antivirus scan is actually the real virus. It's a phishing scam. So it's making people believe it's something that it's not, and then it's downloading the virus. And I've had it to the point where people will have not just scans, but actual programs that sell themselves as antivirus software that's really just, you know, it's stealing your data and it's making your PC messed up.
Well,
the latest one out there to watch for is, I think, PostArus Internet Security 2011. It's the latest one I've seen one of my comrades fall with. So, and I still haven't even removed it. So they're definitely tough and they do come back. That's the biggest one. Another one I myself almost fell for, so everyone stand back. But I typed in – what did I type in? I typed in – I was going to Facebook, right? And I had somehow typed in the address with only one O instead of two O's. So when I got to it, it redirected so fast, you know, you didn't even see the redirection. And it was the same style layout and theme as the real Facebook, and it said – you know, you've been selected to take a survey by Facebook. So I'm sitting here thinking, you know, this is kind of weird that Facebook would be offering this kind of, you know, this kind of incentive to take the feedback. And, you know, it was the, you know, the $1,000 Best Buy card. But I couldn't find anything suspicious about it. It looked like the real deal. And then I realized, for some reason it wasn't clicking at first, and it probably won't for a lot of users, but I realized it wasn't the actual Facebook.com address. And after doing research for a while, you know, I figured it out that I had typed in only 10 instead of 2 because I couldn't get it to come back up again. So I thought, you know, maybe it really was one of those crazy. But, you know, if it sounds good to be – if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is, especially right. on the internet. So any of that stuff that's asking you for a free scan, anything that wants you to take a survey – close out Internet Explorer and start a new session, because I guarantee you if you get into the habit of seeing something like that and closing the internet browser and going somewhere else, as soon as you see that, you'll be saving yourself a huge headache.
Yeah. Yeah, and I have to tell my kids all the time, guys, don't, you know, if you see anything that's out of the norm, don't okay it, right? You shouldn't have to okay this stuff. And so you know, I get parents that call me all the time and say, okay, what do I do? So I'll tell you guys what I do, and then you guys can tell me how you handle these problems. So I found one, I always make sure they have got at least some kind of antivirus. People are getting better about having at least something that's free, whether it's AVG or one of the other free, you know, there's a million free kinds. Certainly, John, you mentioned it earlier, right? Microsoft Security Essentials comes from Microsoft, updates every day. Solid, average, everyday, garden variety antivirus, right? We all use it. Christian, do you use it?
Which one are we talking
about? Microsoft Security Essentials.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So kind of your
– I wrote an ad in for it, yeah.
Yeah, right. Kind of your baseline defense on the PC. And I always tell people, got to have that first. And then if you even think you have a virus, the best one I've found – and it doesn't mean it's the best one. It's the best one I've found is AnyMalwareBytes. So, it's MalwareBytes. So, MalwareBytes.org. And that just seems to be a very industrial strength antivirus or any malware remover. And I always tell people, boot into safe mode, you know, install it, put it on, go to a computer that's not infected. In fact, whenever I do a new install, because I know I'm going to come back in 6 months and remove a virus, I just put it on there automatically, right? So that I can boot into safe mode in networking, update that program, and then run it. And it usually removes, almost 100% of the time, it removes the virus and brings the PC back to its normal state. So that's kind of my toolbox for, you know, if I've gotten some kind of infection. John, do you do anything different? And then that is people. If I'm sure you get those calls, right, from friends and family.
Yeah, that's it. That's why I tell them get themselves a Windows Home Server, but that's because an expensive solution.
Yeah, but from an antivirus standpoint, though, do you get many calls from folks who say my computer's got a virus? Can you come help me out, or what do I do, or do you have kind of a standard set of tools you use to remove viruses?
You know, no, not really.
Okay.
I try. The best thing I try, because you know some of them are so bad there that it's almost like you have to do a reinstall of Windows.
Yeah.
So one of the things is like in Windows, what is it? They're built in. There's the name is escapes me there, but you know when you can what was it there?
Restore
Christian,
point?
Help me out. So
is that
yes,
a restore point.
Yeah, restore. Yeah, system restore. Is that right. What they still call it? System restore.
I think so.
Yeah. System restore. So just restore to yesterday or the day before, and hopefully that'll get rid of what it is. You know, you'll be back to the day before, and you'll be good. Because sometimes trying to hunt and peck them, sometimes it's it might be something that just happened recently, and then you do a Google and you find out, oh yeah, there's a nice little here's the fix for it or whatever. Sometimes I'll run like you say the Security Essentials or Malwarebytes. But, you know, if things are consistent, you know, it's like, well, I did this and that, it just continues, the problems just continue to grow. And it's like, well, just restore it to a couple of days ago.
Right. So, and a couple points to iterate on what Jim mentioned in his toolbox. With the Security Essentials, that's really a development and a second step to Microsoft's original tackle, which was Windows Defender. Now, some of you may or may not have heard of that. That was something that originally, I believe, was packaged as a part of Windows Vista, and if you install Windows 7 by default, it will show up as Windows Defender. It is now automatically included with Windows 7. So if you see Windows Defender, yes, you're somewhat protected, but if you get that Security Essentials download, then when you run the setup, Microsoft knows to turn off Windows Defender and put on the new Security Essentials. So there was a change where originally it was under the product line Windows Defender, and that moved over to Security Essentials, which I really do like the whole retake they did on Security Essentials. Now, Jim said he uses Malwarebytes, which I have used before, and I do like. The one kind of down, it's not a downside, but the one feature it really doesn't have on a high level is Active Guard, which is making correct. Sure if a virus is trying to take over your PC, the antivirus program will stop it in its tracks before damage is done. So the best one I have found that doesn't hog resources and really just does a nice job of catching everything and anything is Avira Antivirus, and they do have three editions, the free, premium, and there's another tier after that. And I used the free edition, and the only limitation of the free edition is that once a day, a little box comes up when the automatic updates comes up that just shows a small advertisement for the premium edition. So really, it's no big deal. You get so used to it, you just hit OK and whatever. So this is what I've been giving to all my clients for security, and it's great. You know, if it sees something that's on a USB drive that looks suspicious, you know, literally 2 seconds after the USB drive plugs in, the guard will pop up and it'll stop any running activity in its footsteps. And then it'll ask you, do you want to remove it? Do you want to quarantine it? So I think it's really great for a scanning utility. So it's similar in terms of malware bytes, but that Active Guard, it really does a great job. And sure, it's going to take up some system resources, but compared to the other ones like Norton, it's a champ all the way. So that's what I've been using in combination with Security Essentials, and I haven't gone wrong with it since.
Well, Christian, you bring up an interesting point because some of those antivirus solutions became big resource hogs. Yep. And so, sure, they were protecting your computer, but at a tremendous cost. So there is a balance between performance and protection, and I think folks need to kind of try solutions that work best for them. Everybody kind of has their own kind of way of approaching it. If you're not real tech savvy and you're listening to this podcast, you know, consult one of your tech friends and have them help you. The right way is the one that you have on your PC that works for you. There's a variety of different ways to do it. Gordon had mentioned in chat that he also uses a service called OpenDNS, and that's available at opendns.org, I believe. And that's actually set at the router level. And so that's not antivirus. It's more of content filtering. That's kind of what I would call it. Instead of your requests going to your ISP's DNS servers, it goes to OpenDNS's DNS servers to be filled, and they've got kind of lists of sites that are known to have malware and phishing and those kinds of things. And it's kind of, at least at my house, I use it as well, and it's kind of my first line of defense for the kids. They do a nice job of filtering out 80% of the crap, probably 80 to 90% of the crap before it gets in. And that works out real well. You can set up a free account. That setting it up on your router is very simple. Just, you know, like when you set up your router, when you got it and it's brand new, you just go in and put in their DNS numbers in the router and click save and you're done. So there's instructions on there. If you want to try that out, go to the opendns.org. Christian, have you tried that? Have you seen that? Are you opposed to going to a different DNS service than your current ISP?
No, I haven't really used the OpenDNS service because, you know, I have a direct account with IX Web Hosting, so I do all my DNS and A records and that kind of stuff there. But I don't really see a huge concern with it. It's a great service. I know a lot of people use it, and it's reliable, so I have no complaints there.
John, any yep. any?
Yeah, you bring up a good point there because I think those guys at OpenDNS, they check stuff like that where you type the wrong name, like Google, you know, or Facebook. If you spell it wrong, like they'll redirect it to the right place.
Yes, yeah, they even have some things in their control panel that so you could set a DNS shortcut. So say you go to Facebook a lot, you can just type F and enter, and it'll take you right to Facebook. On any PC in that's behind that router at your house. So that's kind of cool. We set one up for, I think, Google. That way you just type G and enter, and it would take you right to the Google search page. The kids thought that was pretty cool. You know, to be able to do a one, you know, one button click to get that. So some services out there, some really good guys, and I've been using that OpenDNS for a couple, I don't know, 3-4 years now. The other thing they advertise is because you're not going to your, they optimize their servers for speed. This, the OpenDNS does. And so they say they're actually faster at serving pages back to you than your own ISP. And so if your ISP is slow, give this OpenDNS a shot, opendns.org, and I'm pretty sure that's right. I'll have to look it up. We'll put it in the show notes and go from there. Okay, last thing, guys, I want to talk about. Of course, you know, I was out at CES for the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas last week. I know, John, you and I actually, you caught me on Saturday morning. I was out for a run, and I was filming the, you know, I was shooting some video from my phone, my Android phone, live on Ustream, and then you kind of popped into chat. That was kind of fun. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I got you. I got you a couple of times. I saw a quick video. It's like I see you walking up some stairs in some, you know, some place, and like the building, like the walls were white, but the bottom of the walls were like all brown. I was like, this place is, I don't know, it's a scary apartment building or something.
The Sahara. We were at the Sahara, and it was that, you know, I was running. I was kind of showing I was doing some filming and some fitness stuff for the fitness tech podcast that I do as well. And so I thought, well, I got a stair workout in, and boy, the stairs at the Sahara haven't been cleaned in 30 years. And it was kind of nasty, but yeah, on Friday I did a stair workout, and then on Saturday I ran from the Sahara down to the Bellagio, which is about 2.1 or 2.2 miles. And that's where you caught me on there. But that was pretty cool. I could see you writing in chat, and then you could hear me through Ustream.
Yeah, wow, what technology. I saw Twitter, and I said, oh, you know, I think, hey, Jim's on there, let's see what Jim's doing, and there you are, heading out for a run.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Hey, anything that you guys, certainly you guys kind of maybe followed the news. John, I'll ask you first, anything come out of CES that surprised you, or, you know, any kind of new product that
what surprised me was Microsoft, like Windows. They were talking about the new version of Windows. It's supposed to be, they'll be supporting a system on a chip and like ARM processors, you know, which is, you know, these CPUs are like, you know, the size of your thumbnail. So they say basically they'll be able to have a whole computer on the size, like on a deck of cards. Like memory, video, and all this stuff on, you know, something that's it.
Yeah.
It's like, it would be like having your, you know, your Zune or your, you know, your iPhone, and that's all a computer. You just plug a HDMI cable, and then you'd have your wireless keyboard and mouse, and that's your whole computer. So that's really something interesting. I'd like to see, you know, how they do that, and, you know, with this, and it's supposed to support newer technology and stuff. I think more, better wireless, and I forget exactly what they were saying there, but.
Yeah.
Supposed to be a little bit better. And then the other thing I found interesting that I was hoping for, and at least they did talk about, was the Windows Embedded 7, which that software, it's a componentized or component, or yeah, it's like boxes, you know, like you can pick and choose what components of Windows 7 you want installed on a small device, and the version that they came out with just recently, like 6 months ago, included the Windows Media Center. So now they're actually, you know, putting this software on these little set-top boxes. So now you'll be able to take these little boxes instead of building, like, you know, a quick PC, you know, what we refer to as a HTPC, home theater PC. Instead of building, you know, a $500 box, connecting it to your TV, running Media Center, well, now you can have all of this on these small little set-top boxes, which are the size of, like, these Rokus and, you know, Western Digital Live and all that stuff. So so that I'm interested. I'm looking forward to that, because a lot of people, you know, they complain about the, you know, the their what they, you know, pay for their cable subscription and this and that. And it's like, you know, can we get some content from, you know, HD on the over the air? it's you know, it's free and it's great quality. So it's like, you know, how can we take advantage of that without having to spend $500 for a you know, that type of PC?
Yeah.
So I'd like to see those boxes, and that's it. They're talking about it. Some, you know, I'm sure the first few ones are going to be, you know, in the $400 range and stuff like that. But then I hope it'll come down.
Prices
to a nice
should come down, son. Yeah. John, Dave and I got a chance to sit in the embedded room there in the Microsoft booth and kind of do a personal interview with Joel from the home server team. So I think Dave's got some of that video. Watch the homeservershow.com site, and there'll be some updates on some of the embedded devices that are coming. Mm-hmm. We knew you were looking for those, so we took some video of it, so cool. Watch for that.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. You bet. Christian, anything for you that came out of CES? Did you watch that very closely at all?
I did track some of the hardware stuff, not really on the tablet and software end, but right. I did see the article on the – now this is getting technical, but the DDR4 RAM chips that Samsung had on display that apparently is supposed to be – I don't know if this is right, but I believe it's supposed to be double bandwidth of the DDR3 out now. So that's going to be a speed demon. And
yeah,
I
that'd be significant.
Yeah, I imagine that's going to line up with the AM3 Plus line, right? So the AM3 Plus chipset line with AMD. So that's going to be the new hot setup for hardware enthusiasts. And in terms of tablets, yeah, I was really impressed by some of the Android tablet market. I know the Barnes & Noble Nook, if anyone's a Nook fan, they're going to support it with the Froyo 2.2 Android. So Android's taking over the tablet market. So it's going to be interesting to see if Microsoft can pull this off with Windows 8. I think that's really where one of the connection points for me was whether or not Android or Windows 8 is going to battle out in the tablet market. But I really haven't seen Windows 8, so I'd have to give hands down to Android at this point. And to an aside to the whole tablet ordeal, this is, again, going on a tangent, but the NVIDIA class action lawsuit was just settled December 20th. Now, if any of you aren't aware of what that is, and it hasn't really been publicized much, but NVIDIA's mobile platform several years ago, the 430 series computers, so this was a common chip that was put in pretty much every laptop brand from your MacBook Pro to your Dell, and there were significant heat issues that NVIDIA still denies. But as a result of evidence brought through court, a class action lawsuit was settled, and we have a settlement. So people can send in their computers to get a free replacement if it shows the signs that were brought up. So we had bought a tablet, an HP TX tablet, and that had the Windows 7 functionality, and it had the heat issues. So it's getting replaced with, and we did qualify for the lawsuit because the wireless card failed and intermittent video issues, and they're replacing it with an Asus 10.1-inch EEPC tablet, oh, which wow. has Windows 7 on it. It's got this great little touchscreen. It's a $500 tablet. And it's running the new dual-core Pine Atom CPU kind of stuff. So you've got to imagine how nice the battery life is going to be mm-hmm. and that kind of stuff. So I'm just thinking, you know, how cool is that hardware going to be? And, you know, I just can't wait to see what kind of replacement I'm going to get from that, because that's new stuff. So it's going to be really interesting to see where the connect point is and what changes and developments they have made at CES over something that I'm just getting off the market now. And I think one of the significant things that I see coming out is, you know, with these tablets being able to, like, just remove and attach, like, a keyboard to it, and different ways of presenting the screen and the keyboard. So tablets, I'm convinced, and I'm pretty sure a lot of other people are, tablets is going to be the hot item of next year. I think the iPad really got things starting, and it's not really like the true tablet in the way you think of it, but yeah, it's the tablet. You know, nothing has contended with the iPad at this point. You know, it just dominates for what it does, and there's just been so many sales, and now we're seeing the Android market starting to take a really nice foothold. So I'm excited to see the battle, because Windows, Android, and Apple, they're all going to the match, and as a result, competition, there's going to be good products. So I'm very excited to see what's going to come of this.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I think 2011 will be an exciting year for those technologies. And of course, they'll just get better and they'll get cheaper. So we've got some exciting things ahead for us. So, well, guys, Dave and I shot a bunch of video out there, and we didn't, we didn't put all that. A lot of folks just took all their CES video and just dumped it to the web, and so there's been a lot of coverage out there. Dave and I are going to kind of clean some of that stuff up and release it over time. So, if you are interested in seeing some of the things that we saw at CES, you can you'll find many of those over at thehomeservershow.com. Or I'll be posting some of the things, and I got some videos already out, some fitness tech stuff that that I did at Showstoppers here at theaverageguy.tv, and you can check those out. I'd love to hear your comments. If you have any comments about the show, or have questions for us, or want to give some feedback in on things we could talk about, or stuff you're interested in, that address is just podcast@theaverageguy.tv, and we'll get that in and. Get that addressed on the show. We podcast every Thursday night, sometime around 7 Central. We don't always make it on time. And we are live on Ustream, theaverageguy.tv/live. So you can listen to us on did I say Wednesday? It's Thursday evenings. And we do that. John, I appreciate you coming out tonight and kind of pinch hitting for Brian. And you did a great job. So thanks for coming out tonight.
Great, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Christian, good to have you as well and kind of catch up with you. We haven't done much in the last 2 weeks, but I appreciate you coming out as well this evening.
Thanks for having me, guys.
You bet. All right, and good night to the Ustream. We didn't have a ton out there, Gordon and Jim. Thanks for joining us and joining us in chat. We do, I think now we're going to probably do Ustream every week. So if you want to join us in live chat, you can do that. And we're out there and we take your questions live. So appreciate you coming out tonight. Everyone have a good evening, and we'll see you back here next week for the Home Tech Show. Good night. John, do you have an Xbox?
Yeah, I got a 360, and back in the day, I'm an old man. Back in the day, I had the original Xbox.
Yeah.
And I hacked that thing. My brother still hacks it, and he still loves it. You know, putting a XBMC, Xbox Media Center on there, because that's a wonder. So, like, we hacked that box and got all that software on there, and it's an excellent extender. Like, you can connect to Shoutcast, you can connect to a whole bunch of stuff that even these modern streamers that they have can, challenge that box,
Yeah.
But, they're hard to come by, and they're a little bit noisy, and then the thing is they don't do 1080p. Right. I think the highest is maybe 720 and stuff like that. So, and unfortunately, we can't hack the new ones yet, so...
That's the original Xbox, John? Or
yeah, that's the original, the black one.
Yeah, I've got the black one sitting on my shelf right above me here. And, back in 1985, so let's talk about back in the day. Christian, were you even born in 1985?
Nope.
So back in 1985, I bought a Timex Sinclair 1000, which was it may even have been an 8-bit PC that you'd plug into your TV and you could do BASIC programming on it, and a little membrane keyboard. It was kind of an all-in-one unit, and I had that thing for
I still have a couple of them.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh man, when I come visit
the thermal printer,
yes,
the black printer,
really,
and the thermal paper, so if you heat it up,
yeah,
with a lighter,
yeah,
whatever. That's how we would print. It would print with dots, right? It would just do dots, and that's what would print. And the memory cartridges, yeah, there were like these big,
yeah,
like these black things that you would snap in the back. I think there was 8K or 16K and stuff like that. Yeah, DOS. Did I have a TRS-80? No, I had a Commodore 64 and the Commodore, yeah, 64, the VIC-20, but I also had the TS-1000, yeah.
Well, and I bought this little Sinclair. I couldn't have been more than $150 when I bought it. It didn't seem like it was that expensive, because I would have never have had that much money to buy. It seemed like it was inexpensive. Maybe I got it on clearance or something, but... and I kept that thing for about 10 years. And then I think, one day you're cleaning stuff out. 10 years seems to be that point where you're cleaning stuff out and you're like, I'm never going to use this thing again, right? So I tossed it. 15 years later, I was so mad at myself for like, oh, why didn't I hold on to that? I found the manual, but I couldn't find the actual unit, you know, and it would be so cool to still have that thing. So the Xbox, the original Xbox is sitting on the shelf. I probably got the original box around here somewhere, but that's going to be something I'm going to hold on to and you know, keep so that 30 years from now I can pull it out and go, remember when we used to do this stuff and it wasn't in the cloud?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's like I said, my brother still uses it regularly in his place. I had even my Xbox, original Xbox, what I did is I actually, because I don't play any games on it, I actually cut it in half. I took out the CD drive and I took out the hard drive and I replaced it with a laptop drive.
Yeah.
And I actually cut the thing in half like a cake, you know, like through the half. So it's like a slim. It's neat when you look at it. It's like slim. It's half the profile.
Wow.
It's the same size, but half as high.
Really?
And that's it. And, you know, it plugs to the TV and, you know, you use it as an alarm clock. It works, connects to your radio. Like, wow. You know, like I said, websites and this and that. It's great. It's great, the things that it could do.
Wow.
And, you know, that's sometimes my brother, once in a while, he'll pick one up in one of these surplus stores for like $40.
Yeah.
And just hack it. You know, put the software in it, burn the stuff and whatever, and then just get that thing. So it's a nice little machine.
And this is the original Xbox you're talking about.
The original Xbox.
I'll have to bring my Xbox to Canada so you can hack it up for me.
Okay.
Putting your Xbox on a diet.
That's kind of cool, John. You should get. Do you still have those?
Yeah. So I'll have to send you some links.
Should take some pictures.
You'll be able to burn some. You'll be able to burn that CD there. It's there's just a software hack for it to get it
very
done.
Nice.